Yeah, don't get us wrong. There's still going to be plenty of randomness to the show.
Of course, that's the name football, of the show. The other name is Off Topic.
But this is football.
What you want, we've got, and it might be hard to listen, but it makes your rage glisten. Our voice is about the games. And you know, we talk about the latest goings, more so than any other, and our Mountain West matters. Well, will you listen to this podcast too? And you rant about this podcast too. Just a site where Jeremy analyzes some matches, and kids can grin the bridges. We do some good interviews. And you know, from Fresno all the way to Boise, from Logan down to Esty, they're calling out our name. Where will you listen to this podcast too?
Welcome back to the Mountain West Connection podcast, where we are fan 1A and 1B of not Jeff Tedford, Jeremy Moss here, Matt Kennerly over there, specifically not Tedford.
I am 1A though.
Yes, 1A. Let's say this. So let's say you're not, well, for me, I will say I'm not Tedford in the way they're going about doing it. I would be okay if they actually did a natural search, but we'll get to it in a minute. MWCConnection.com, that's our website. Again, plenty of people listening to this podcast. I don't know how you're finding it. Maybe we're getting better. Are we actually getting better at this, Matt? Maybe?
Maybe they like our Tedford talk. Maybe they like that. Maybe we're somehow less biased these days, and that's working out for people. I don't know.
Twitter, I would say that's impossible.
That's true.
I'm just curious. Yeah, our Twitter handle, that's MWC Connection, Facebook, Mountain West Connection. And for the first little bit, if you guys want to fast forward and you're not a Fresno fan, that's fine. We're going to talk about the coaching search now because it's a freaking mess.
Coaching search?
Exactly. What search? What search is there?
It's like a heat seeker missile.
That's a good example. I'll start off with this. There was the... Well, let's go back to the press conference. We talked about it last week in our show, but I guess we did 20 minutes plus. But the one thing I noticed, which state law requires this job to be open for 2 weeks.
Yes, it's already open. If anybody out there would like to apply,
the link is on our website. I put a quick article about how it's a joke. And two things with that, it has to be open 2 weeks. So a hire officially cannot take place until November 7th. And so two things with that. Like, I've been part of jobs where I know I applied for, found it later. It was going to be promised to one guy, but they had to have it open. That happens a lot. I don't care about that, but according to people out there, Jeff Tedford was the guy. Basically, he's going to be hired before the body was cold or before he was hung from the guillotine. Drudder was not even officially out yet. And this guy was Tedford, we're referring to Jeff Tedford, that is, former CFL coach. I'm not going to say former Pac-12, Pac-10 school coach. Can I go as former CFL coach?
You can say whatever you like.
Former college football play drawer.
Soon to be former Washington analyst.
There you go. Here's a couple things. Like, let me start. We'll go back and forth because there's a lot we could say about this because we're both pretty much on the same page. Putting the job out there is fine. You know, it's 2 weeks, but there's reports, like I said, right away. Another one today from Sporting News out there as well saying, hearing the same things. Who's going to apply? Because part of the NFL thing, like, we joked around right before we got on here. Your list has
Jagodzinski.
Yes, I apologize. I said a fight before the show. I'm like, jeez. That guy, former BC coach. It's going to come back full circle. He actually won an ACC title with BC, which nowadays, if they could score a field goal, they're cheering in the streets. He interviewed for the Jets head coaching job, fired. That sucks. That shouldn't happen. But a lot of times when jobs are opening, the reason I'm bringing him up because they will go for interview even though they kind of know they're not going to get the job, but they want to go through the process,
mm-hmm.
which is a good thing. Like, even if they know they have their guy, or it's like the Rooney rule in the NFL. You got to at least fake or pretend to interview a minority candidate for their head coaching job or a front office personnel position. So with this job being open and all the reports out there for Tedford, unless the coach really, really wants to go through the process, and who knows how much of an interview or how much time Jim Bartko wants to spend with the guy, 4 hours, 5 hours, multiple interviews, multiple day interview, how much time he wants to listen to a guy, even though it could be beneficial down the road to both parties, possibly, why would I want to interview for a job or apply for a job I know I'm zero chance to get? And that could rule out possible candidates. Like I mentioned, Bob Stitt, I like him. I think he could be a good fit, not a huge jump. FBS, a team that needs to rebuild, but it's not going to an extremely high-profile job where he's going to want to win right away. And so my thinking is, who's going to want to apply, either get slapped around or get a token interview that's really a joke and not a real interview where you prepare your playbook, you prepare your philosophy and all sorts of things like that. I don't know who would want to apply for that type of job when they know there's no chance of getting it. And you may not get the respect you deserve during the interview as well.
Yep. So, I mean, to me, it's like all of that, and you end up with Jeff Tedford.
Eh.
And I think, I mean, I've talked at length to a lot of Fresno State fans, you know, not only, you know, on Twitter and stuff like that, but I also write occasionally for the Bark Board over on scout.com. And I put together a list, and, you know, it's been divisive, to put it kindly. One of Jim Sweeney's daughters, I guess, called my list quote unquote total bullshit.
So who's Jim Sweeney? Because I didn't know who it was when we spoke before.
That is the legendary head coach of the Fresno State Bulldogs before Pat Hill.
Okay.
College Football Hall of Fame coach.
Was there any explanation to why? Or was that the only
comment? None whatsoever. And, you know, I've tried to engage with a lot of the arguments, and, you know, you can get the rundown of that on my article that I put up, I think it was a couple days ago at this point.
Go check that out.
Yeah, so I came up with my own list, and I really built it around, like, four different things that if it were up to me, I would look for. Like, the ability to develop a quarterback, affordability, youth, and coordinator experience.
Hey, so Lonnie Galloway fits that pretty well.
Yeah, so, I mean,
ever heard of Lamar Jackson, folks?
Yeah, if you've watched Lamar Jackson at all this year, just know that it's not all Bobby Petrino, right? You know, Lonnie Galloway is Louisville's offensive coordinator, and that's exactly the kind of guy that they should have an eye on. Because, you know, a guy like that should be able to take someone like Chasen Virgil and, you know, turn him into a weapon, not only with his arm, but with his legs. Turn him into a true dual threat quarterback, right? I'm already running into people who aren't convinced that Chasen Virgil isn't the future. Never mind that he has another 3 years of eligibility after this. I'm running into people who place like such a high value on the fact that Jeff Tedford has Fresno State connections. To which I say, who cares? Like,
Michigan where they wanted to go with whatever they're doing, but come on, a couple years ago.
And I was talking briefly with Merrick Warzowski, who's a columnist for the Fresno Bee, earlier this afternoon. He and I were talking about the fact that, you know, it's a 2 or 3 year job, right? Mm-hmm. And so, but somehow we ended up with like completely different conclusions because of that. Like the common, you know, conclusion that people come up with is like Jeff Tedford's the safe hire, right? And to me, like if you look at some of the coaches that were hired 2 or 3 years ago, the coaches that are winning big right now are the guys who weren't exactly safe hires. And I'm talking about guys like PJ Fleck at Western Michigan, you know, someone like Jeff Brohm, who was the OC at Western Kentucky before they elevated him to being their head coach. But, you know, he didn't have any connections to the Hilltoppers before they hired him.
Really quick on PJ Fleck, just for a moment. I'll let you get back to it, but I'm looking at his Wikipedia page. Yes, he was in the MAC a little bit. He was a freaking wide receiver coach in the NFL than head coach with the Bucks. And so that's a pretty big jump. He was never an OC before. Like, it just really quick, he was the GA at Ohio State, wide receivers coach at NIU and Rutgers and in Tampa. No coordinator. That's not a safe hire. Regardless of, even if you go experience, connection, that's like an out of the blue hire if I ever saw one.
Exactly. And I mean, he's just kind of the most extreme example, but like, you know, other guys like, you know, Philip Montgomery at Tulsa, you know, the Golden Hurricanes 5-2. And we saw just what his team could do up close and personal earlier this season.
They're going to win the American in like 2 years, if not this year, with him.
You know, Jason Candle was the OC under Matt Campbell, or Jason Candle was the OC under Matt Campbell for, I think, like a year before they elevated him to the head coach at Toledo. He didn't have any connections to Toledo before that. And they, you know, they're like, what, 6-1 right now? You know,
quite well, could be undefeated. 3 points for being undefeated.
So, I mean, I don't understand this whole they have to play it safe narrative. I mean, if you look at the article, I'll just repeat it here very briefly. The teams that like play it safe, that hire, let's be real, retreads like Jeff Tedford, the best case scenario is that, you know, maybe they're competitive, but like the closest analogs that I could think of in the group of five, you know, you're talking about Skip Holtz at Louisiana Tech, Tommy Tuberville at Cincinnati, Bob Davey, who we're all familiar with, Football Bob! And
Bowden at Akron.
Terry Bowden at Akron.
And also, you could put in Frank Solich at Ohio.
But he's been around for a while. But he wasn't exactly a retread because he was actually very successful at Nebraska.
Yeah. Nebraska has those high expectations.
But, you know, between the four guys I listed, guess how many conference titles they have?
Zero?
Zero.
Closest is what, PJ Fleck, I think?
Yeah, people are saying, like, this is a two-
In New Mexico.
This is the 2 or 3 year fix. Well, yeah, no duh, it's a 2 or 3 year fix. But guess who else has had 2 or 3 year fixes? The teams that are winning right now in pretty much every single conference in the group of five.
Like, look at Wyoming. We really thought Craig Bull would have it done last year. They're not, but year three, look what they're doing. Nick Rolovich, year one, doing well. Except PJ Fleck, a couple years. Tom Herman took over a good thing in Houston, with who we had, doing extremely well. Here's the thing. You're firing your coach. There's a reason you need a new coach. You're not a good football team, people. If you were a good football team, you wouldn't need a new coach, and you'd be going to a bowl game and contending for conference titles. A new coach anywhere is going to take a minimum 2 years to turn around. If you turned around a program in 1 year, that's clearly the former head coach's problem, or a million injuries like the final year of Pat Hill, you mentioned before. Yeah. So you can't expect to go, yes, the West Division is not very good, but guess what? Hawaii's getting better. Aztecs aren't going anywhere. UNLV and Hawaii. Sorry, I'm going on. Rebels in Hawaii are getting better. It's not a great division, so it's a good spot to win quickly. You're not winning in this division now, and you have okay talent. Let me put it this way. You've recruited good talent. You need a new coach. That's all I can say. If you need a new coach, you're not going to be going to a bowl game next year.
Exactly.
And that's the point. I don't get what's Tedford going to do? You put it out there, Kyle Bowler, okay, he was with the Ravens. All right. Aaron Rodgers, very, very good.
Can I just stop
Everybody else has been okay.
Can I just stop you there for a second?
Yes, go ahead. Stop me, please.
If you're thinking about using Kyle Bowler as a defense for Jeff Tedford, just stop. Because Kyle Bowler was one of the
worst. He went to the Ravens. Come on. He was in the NFL, Matt. Come on.
He's one of the worst first-round quarterbacks of all time. And it's like, Kyle Bowler. Joey Harrington. Achilles Smith. Oh, you mean three of the worst first-round quarterbacks of all time?
Pretty much.
Guys who, you know, if you really take a long look at the numbers they put up under Tedford, weren't that good.
And Smith was a running guy mostly, too.
Yeah. And so it's just like, it's a little bit headache-inducing, to be honest. I legitimately thought Fresno State fans were smarter than this.
And here's one thing as well. I put it in the article today. When one reason, I know the APR is not perfect by any means. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of issues with like transfers, guys going to the NFL. Oh, also one error we made last week. Tedford does have a degree, so we need to back off and say he doesn't say
master's degree.
No, it says preferred master's degree.
Oh, that's what I'm saying. That was the whole
preferred
joke.
I know, but last week we said he did not have a degree at all. So I think we erred on that. But I've looked around. He does, which good for him. But back to the APR, there's a lot of stuff with it where, like I said, transfers, guys go to pro. But Cal, that was one of the reasons he was let go. And the number one reason, which I was going to put in more for the on the article I did about the contract being out there, but the number one reason, or number one what like job requirement, was something to do with APR. How can you justify bringing him in? Not to say it's the end all be all, but how can you put that number one on your list? Because there's an order there. There's a reason that's at the top that you bring him in where there was APR issues, despite the former Cal AD saying we tripled our academic staff to help him out. Still, APR is not where it needed to be. I know Cal's very difficult to go through, but APR doesn't matter if you're at Cal, Princeton, wherever, a good school where it's grades hard to get in. But once you're there, it's equal playing field for grades. It's hard to flunk out. Like, I know people, if you go to Stanford, Cal, those top schools, once you're in, they don't want you to flunk out. So to put that number one at the top and for Fresno State, and then part of the reason Tedford was let go because of APR score, come on. That's another thing where, I know it's not all his fault, but you got to look into that stuff as well.
Yeah, and I mean, I'm a little less familiar with the whole academic side of it, but I mean, just looking at, like, the results that his offense has put up with, you know, especially a quarterback. He's supposed to be a quarterback guru. And
allegedly.
You know, like I'll refer you for more detail to the article that I wrote. But from, you know, in the post Aaron Rodgers years, which is from, you know, 2005 to 2012 when he got fired, his quarterbacks only cracked 60% one time as passers. And if you want to succeed, you have to be efficient in this league. And, you know, if you look at some of the quarterbacks, you know, Christian Chapman actually leads the conference right now in completion percentage. He's at
60%. What?
Yeah. Wow. Tyler Stewart is actually number two with 63%. You know, Brett Rippon's at 62.6. Even Drew Brown is at 62% since becoming the starter. You know, that's the benchmark that you need to get to have an efficient passing attack these days. And just based off of that kind of track record alone, I don't know if Tedford's the guy to get Virgil or anybody else that they bring in to that level.
So I get he's done okay. Like, it, my main problem is, like, there's a lot of reasons to like or not like him. I think I said before, my main reason issue is that, like you mentioned before, jokingly, heat seeking missile essentially for this hire.
Mm-hmm.
Had they gone through, because they already said they're not doing a coaching firm, which is nice. That's a waste of the six figures. I want to get that job someday. That'd be nice. Be part of a firm to do that. But had they gone through, you heard the interview. They put out flyers to Lane Kiffin. They go out to Major Applewhite, or they go to whatever. Matt Wells is thrown out there. That's ridiculous. But they put out flyers to just Trent Dilfer, whomever out there you're looking at, Louisville OC, even Mark Helfrich, he might be out of set down the road. But like you said, Doug Nussmeier, Jim Lovett, whoever you're looking at, that would be fine. But Tedford, like you said, Tedford's not even number one. What's higher than one? Is there something higher than number one choice? Alpha choice or something? Because that's where Tedford is. And it boggles my mind that he's there. Go through a regular search, interview a bunch of guys, names will float out here and there, but if you decide on Tedford, great. But my main beef is that going after him so hard as the top choice, no matter what.
Yeah, I mean, I put together a list of like 11 or 12 guys that I would consider talking to. But if I'm being real, like, I could think of at least three guys I'd rather have than Tedford. I'd rather have Galloway. I'd rather have Noel Mazzoni, who's the offensive coordinator at Texas A&M.
What about Tony Franklin at Middle Tennessee State, OC, former of Cal?
No, because I feel like he's a lot like Tedford, where he's an older guy. He's,
okay,
you know, something like that. And, you know, I would rather have someone, I mean, if there was one guy I'd like back up the Brinks truck for, which I think is extremely unlikely, it'd be Luke Fickle, the Ohio State defensive coordinator. You know, I'd rather have Blake Anderson from Arkansas State. I'd rather have Morgan Scally from Utah. How many? That's like five guys right there that I'd rather have than Tedford.
I don't know what else is to say. I just don't know if people tell us. I know people. We know people listen to the show, so give us a comment, whatever, Twitter, Facebook page, whenever we post this up. Let us know. And again, you can't just say quarterback guru because whatever. Tell us why.
Because it's overblown. That's why
it is. He could coach. I'm not saying he's a bad coach. I think people are taking offense to you and me saying he's a terrible coach. He's not. But a couple other, let us know why you'd want him as number 1A without really doing more research than you'd like, at least in my opinion, to pick out your coach. I had something here I was going to look up, but oh, I had a good point here I was going to say. Dang it. I was going to say something. Oh, no, the health. Okay, no, here's I got it right here. Sorry, I was looking. I have too many tabs open here. Mm-hmm. Hey, finished Kyle poorly, which that's why he's hot fired as well. But here's the thing. If he's such a good coach, why was he not coaching for like multiple years? And this is before, I remind you, the health issue thing, because he was out in 2012. He was out for a year or so, which is fine. He went to Tampa Bay, had to step away from, was it heart condition? Is that correct?
I believe so, yeah.
Yeah, heart procedure, which I'm glad he recovered well and doing fine, but he was in the freaking CFL. What type of coaching path is that? And for 1 year as well, before I assume he wants to get back in college, which is why after 2015, he went to go to Washington to be a consultant. So he either wants to coach so bad, he goes to CFL, but it just doesn't make sense. You know what I mean? It's like, who goes to this? No offense to the CFL, but that's a complete, maybe, I don't know. I'm a loss of words here because it's a different game, different field size, three downs. It's a few different rules here and there, but the career path is uneasy for me for him to go back to college. And if he was that good, why wouldn't he get another coaching job somewhere else before?
Two things. First thing is, you know, Fresno State is unique in the sense that no other team in the Group of Five ever got as close to the BCS as often as they did without breaking through. You know, Boise State obviously has won like three or four Fiesta Bowls by this point. You know, Northern Illinois broke through, Utah broke through, TCU broke through. You know, if you look back at, you know, 2001, 2005, 2013, you know, I think those had the effect of really raising the expectations of the program. And I'm not opposed to that. I feel like this team has proven in the past that they are good enough to get there with a few more breaks. But related to that, which is my second point, is you're going to hear a lot about how Jeff Tedford is the safe hire. And I'm going to tell you this right now. Safe hires don't win conference championships.
Charlie Strong was technically a safe hire for Texas.
Safe hires don't get to the New Year's Eve bowl game.
And another name, Charlie Weiss at Kansas. How did that work out for you?
And I'll say this right now. This is my prediction. And I said this on Twitter earlier, so maybe not be a, you know, maybe spoiled or anything like that. But Fresno State's not going to win a conference championship as long as Jeff Tedford's the head coach.
Ooh, that's a pretty good heavy take there.
I mean, maybe they get to a couple of, New Mexico Bowls? Is that really something worth celebrating around here? I don't think so.
No, because Fresno, like I said, they have a tradition of coming, it kind of sucks, but close, but never there. Like, yeah. They've always seemed to be Boise State's rival, but they've never really beat Boise State. They've had very difficult times. They either blow big leads against some, or what was it, when they had David Carr, weren't they top 10 and lost at home to Boise?
Yeah.
Back, like, in, was it 01 or something, the 02 season, I believe?
They were number 8 that year, but yeah.
So, I get their point. Like, there's good football to be had there, and they show they can perform well, but I don't under, like I said, safe hire. Safe is crappy. Why be safe?
If I'm
safe, I want to go to interest rate on my next credit card or mortgage. You know what I mean? I don't want to be safe to, or if I'm going to eat Indian food the first time, I'm going to be safe. This is a dumb example, but if I like pizza or I like tacos or our burrito example, we like burritos, tacos. Mm-hmm. I will give an exotic place to try or a new place to try because, hey, this is different. I don't normally get this, but the ingredients sound good. Why not go for that? They know I'm going to get my same sausage breakfast burrito every day I'm going to get or every other day I'm going to have. I know this stuff looks good. Go for it. Why settle? Even though you know it's good and could be good, but this other thing over here might be great that you don't know about, even though it's 10 miles across town or whatever.
See, here's the analogy I came up with.
I don't know. I'm thinking of something. Does that make sense? I don't know.
People are putting out there, like, you know, they're not interested in another up-and-coming coordinator because look how well that worked out with Drew Reuter. First of all, maybe they should have just never given him the extension to begin with, because that is probably the crux of the entire problem. And second of all, that's like saying that, you know, someone told you about this awesome beach spot and you went there one day and it rained, so you're never going to go back there again. It doesn't make
any sense. Yeah, you stubbed your toe on a rock.
Yeah, it doesn't make any sense whatsoever. So it's kind of asinine, if you're asking me, that you're not going to consider that kind of option again. Tedford doesn't make sense to me. I don't like it. I don't think it's the best option. And I don't think Fresno State's going to get to where it deserves to be as long as he's the head coach.
All right. We've exhausted this enough, because assume it's the guy who, if you had to pick one person, or give me, no, that's not for us. Give me you already mentioned a couple, but one more time. Who are your three choices you'd be happy with them hiring?
In a perfect world, assuming most of the factors, you know, affordability and stuff like that, Lonnie Galloway would be my top three. Noel Mazzoni would be there too. And, you know, assuming they can get a good coaching staff around him, probably someone like Morgan Scalley, who has a recruiting background.
Do not take Morgan Scalley from me.
He has a recruiting background. He's unearthed plenty of unheralded stars, you know, at Utah, from not only up and down California, but across the West. So, you know, I think those would probably be my top three choices, if I were being honest.
Okay. One last thing here. Louisville, if Lonnie Galloway, might be tough, because if they make the playoff,
yeah,
they're not going to allow him. That's a problem, too. Like, people say, oh, Lane Kiffin, but he may not be available until mid-January. It's 3 weeks before signing day. Mm-hmm. So you got to take that consideration as well. Besides even the money, which I don't know how much it can pay, because Drewder was about $1.5 million. Yeah. This next guy might make $800,000, I'm thinking.
Yeah, so I mean, but you know, assuming about $1 million, $1.2 million or something like that, kind of pushing the limits of the budget, those would be my top three.
Yeah, I did a good Galloway, good set. Mazzoni, sure, I'm okay. I'm not a huge fan, but A&M's doing good things now that they got their quarterback situation settled and everybody's done transferring. I think my last word is that It's gonna be freaking to Tedford, but they didn't do the research, and it's gonna bite them. And Bartko's gonna. I'm gonna predict this. Jim, how long is Jim Bartko? He's been there what? Not even a year, right?
He's been there, I think, about 18 months, if I'm not mistaken.
He's not gonna make it past 4 years if Tedford's the head coach. I think Tedford could flame out miserably. I think.
I mean, I guess we'll see.
I'm just thinking. Like, I think it's such a bad hire. Like. Okay, let's do one last thing here, because we need to get a game preview. I know people came for that, I think. But if Tedford's a coach, like, what do you see their future being like in, let's just say he stays for 4 years, and or his 5-year contract, he stays just for that. What do you see in their future? Couple bowl games, maybe one bowl game, 500 record overall? Like, what would you envision it being like with him as a head coach, just say record-wise?
I think they'll be fine, but I don't think they're going to be able to challenge a team like, let's say, San Diego State year in and year out for the division title. You know, they'll be bowl eligible probably most of the time. I would say maybe 3 out of 5 years if he's there 5 years. But I'm not anticipating them doing much more than that if that's the route they're going to take.
Okay, fair enough. Let's move on. We've done enough of Tedford talk here on 25 minutes in. Oh, we better hustle this log, folks. Let's get to some games. Let's get to some stuff we're happy about. I think you and I are the only two people who do not like this move. I will ask one last question. Has there been many people who are located or Fresno fans who are not a fan of this move, potential move?
There are some heroes out there, yes.
So you're calling yourself a hero? I'll take that.
No, not myself, but there are others who aren't fond of the move. And I salute all of you, whoever you are.
Let's get to the game. I'm done with this. It's game time. We'll talk about more about this later. We'll have a few stuff up. But let's get to the games. We start Friday night. There is actually San Diego State will be starting a football game that is not when it's dark outside.
It's not dark by 6 o'clock in Utah.
Oh, sorry, they're at Utah. Crap. Not quite yet. It's getting there. It's getting there. They're playing. Sorry, I thought it was at San Diego State, but they're on the road at Utah State. And is the line still a field goal?
I'm not certain off the top of my head.
I'm going to pull that up really quick. I closed some tabs and was poking around on Wikipedia for PJ Fleck and Jeff Tedford stats moments ago. But they take on Utah State, who Devontae Mays, I don't know. Maybe, maybe not. We'll see. Again, we're not trusting Matt Wells with anything he says about that. or not saying about it. Because I think he just says, oh, he's day to day or whatever. No, it's actually moved to a six. I don't know how it started as a field goal, but 6-point road favor for Aztecs. I still think that's not enough points.
See, what's really interesting to me is I'm looking through some of these numbers for Utah State, and you know, they've done a fairly good job of limiting explosive plays, which I think could play into their favor in this particular matchup, because it's not as though San Diego State is the most explosive, you know, team that there is, right?
Correct.
If you're looking at long scrimmage plays, and I'm trying to look this up real quick, they've only given up, 24 plays, period, running or passing, of more than 20 yards, which is third best in the conference. And it's actually not that far behind the Aztecs defense, which actually leads the conference in that regard. And if you narrow that down more by, opponents' long rushing plays, just comparing the Aztecs and the Aggies again, mm-hmm. on defense, the Aztecs have only allowed 3 runs of 20 plus yards, which is phenomenal, right?
Mm-hmm. Very.
Utah State's only given up 6, which is almost as good. And while they've been a little bit of kind of a bend but don't break defense, I think it'll be interesting to see how much that front 7 can push back against Donnell Pumphrey and, Rashard Penny.
I don't know. Okay, get the yardage out there and do it, because we saw versus Fresno State, he had a monster game. Pumphrey did. Touchdowns were limited, but eventually he'll break through and get at least 100 yards, even against Utah State defense. That's pretty good. I just don't think Utah State has the offense. Let me rephrase that. They might have the offense because, as we've seen and we mentioned a few times before, Aztecs have a vulnerability there, as I try to speak, in the past defensive game. And so Kent Myers, he's been not too bad. He's been okay. Rashad Lewis was shut out last week. I think he had one catch and one rush. Did not play very well. Mm-hmm. Aggies have, I think, enough receivers to maybe do some jiu-jitsu in the passing game, maybe, with going enough wide, like 3 wide out, to make something happen. Because the top Utah State receiver is Rashad Lewis. He's 15th in the conference. So it's not like they're extremely great, but they have Ron Quavy and Tarver there. They also have like White Houston doing well, Andrew Rodriguez, more special teams, but they have enough guys like where they spread it around. Like Rodriguez has 20 receptions on the year, and he's their fourth leading receiver.
Yeah, I mean,
I think they have enough talent to maybe go 3 or 4 wide out, pass more than they want to. It just depends how successful they are doing that. But I think that's why Utah State could make this game more competitive.
Yeah, I mean, I have my doubts in that regard, just because on the year, it's not as though Kent Myers has found a lot of big plays through the passing game. Like, he's only averaging, I think, 6.2 yards per attempt on the year.
Correct.
That's gotten a little better in conference play. Like, he's up to 6.5, and, he's...
Woo!
So, I mean, he's been okay in a lot of respects. Like, he's, about middle of the pack, or actually, he's a little below average, to be honest, and as far as quarterback rating. But he's only thrown 2 interceptions despite throwing more than anybody else in conference play, which I think is a positive sign that he's mostly taking care of the football. He's not taking too many chances, but I think that is a bad matchup against this particular defense, because, just breaking it down by conference play again, San Diego State's basically been otherworldly as a secondary unit. Like, they still haven't given up a touchdown passing the football in conference play.
Did not know that.
They picked off 4 passes. They're giving up less than 4 yards an attempt. And granted, some of that might be the competition that they faced so far, but it's one thing to face, teams like Fresno State and UNLV, but they just like really put the clamps down on them. And so, Utah State might be the best passing team they faced in conference so far, but it's not an elite passing team, if that makes sense. And that's why I think Myers is going to run into a lot of trouble the same way that pretty much everybody else in the division has so far.
You are correct. UNLV, I forgot this was so terrible. 15.4 passing percentage against this Aztec defense.
Quarterback rating of 5.
I don't know how the ratings figured out, but could I have taken this nap and just thrown in complete passing it higher than that?
You probably could have, yeah.
Because he had a pick. There was very few positive plays. 9 yards, one interception. What do you get for just showing up on the sideline?
Yeah.
But you're correct. Like, Utah State, like, if you look at the quarterbacks they face, Kenny Potter is the best by far. And I know he didn't play the whole game, but Fresno as a team went 18-37. And so Kent Myers is no Kenny Potter. He's probably a little bit, I'd say at this point in their career, a little bit better than Chase and Virgil throwing the ball.
Yeah.
Not much, but a little bit. But that's why I said, like, I was trying to make a case for Utah State, and I think that could be the case, but I don't think they'll be consistent enough to be able to move the ball in the air. And then the running game, I don't know if Devontae Mays is coming back, because Matt Wells doesn't say anything. And like I said, I'm going to say he's not playing until I see him actually take a snap on the field. And I think Aztecs could win reasonably good, but I don't see how Utah State can win. Let's say their defense, like, it's not extreme plays, but defense slows down Pumphrey and creates some turnovers in short fields.
Yeah.
Because Kitmar's played okay versus Fresno. He had 3 of his 7 touchdowns of the year in that game, but it is, again, it's Fresno State secondary is not San Diego State.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think there's a path to victory, but I don't think it's an especially likely path to victory for the Aggies.
Oh, you want to hear the exact quote from Matt Wells? I didn't realize, we must have missed this. Devontae Mays actually played one series versus Fresno. Quote of the week again from Matt Wells. Same, I think, as the past 4 weeks. He's getting closer.
I can't argue with it, I guess.
That's what he said every week. He's getting closer. So if Mays plays, say, 50% snaps, would your confidence level sway at all towards them maybe pulling off the upset at home?
No, I don't think so.
I think Aztecs won by 2 touchdowns.
That's kind of what I was thinking as well.
All right, next game. Same night. We have a doubleheader, and this is one of the few doubleheaders. And also, you know what I love about this? They're not at the same time. I remember 2 years ago, CBS and ESPN would have dueling Mountain West games at the same time. Thank you for stopping that for the past couple years.
Under interim head coach Eric Kiesau.
Yes, Eric Kiesau. Oh, we're on to Fresno State again. Love it. Air Force at Fresno State. Air Force, who's lost 3 in a row. Have you already peeked at the line on this game yet?
No, I have not.
Okay, let me paint a picture for you. Air Force has lost 3 in a row. Mm-hmm.
No, wait.
Fresno has...
I take that back. I did look at it when it came out. So I'm just going to think about everything that's happened since I looked at it on Sunday. And I'm gonna guess Air Force is a 16-point favorite.
14. Yeah, a team that lost 3 in a row, going up against a team that lost their head coach.
Something's got...
Two things will happen in this game. As we always know, we're going to rally behind the interim coach, or we're going to fall flat and play at garbage.
Well, I mean, it's... first,
there's usually no in between in the first game back after this.
I'll be at the stadium. How many people will be there with me? I think it's kind of an open question. Like, does firing DeRuiter do anything at all to spur fan interest?
You know what you need to do at this game? You need to do like a Facebook video walking around or from the press box, see how many people are there at kickoff. Quick video.
I may do that in addition to the usual panorama picture. But I think, what I'm looking forward to in this game is, Air Force's secondary in conference play is shaky.
You're being kind.
I'm being kind. They've given up 9 touchdowns in 4 games, which may be a little bit uncharacteristic. They're still roughly middle of the pack as far as, yards allowed per attempt. But I think we expected them to be kind of a top 3 secondary, and they just aren't playing like it in conference play. And they're getting beaten by the likes of, Josh Allen and... I'm trying to remember who else they played. They basically only played 2...
Drew Brown.
The resurgent Drew Brown, yes. And, New Mexico, which hardly counts, but somehow...
For passing, had 2
touchdowns against them.
So, no, that was... Wait, whoa. Wasn't that the game where... No, that was the game Nate Roman had a career high, 280 yards.
It was.
So, yeah, 14 to 28 going all to go to Romanette every time.
So, I'm curious to see whether or not game plan changes at all. And, you know, if Chase and Virgil, first of all, if he's still the starter, I haven't heard anything to suggest that they're going to make a quarterback switch, but, you know, I guess I wouldn't agree with it, but it wouldn't surprise me if Zach Klein came into the game. But regardless of who's at quarterback, are there going to be any changes that help take advantage of this kind of reeling secondary? That's kind of the one big thing that I'm looking out for.
Yeah, you would think with Lapido and Weston still here, but both were preseason all-conference defensive backs.
Mm-hmm.
Not anymore. But here's the thing. We didn't discuss him earlier, but is there any chance that Eric Kiesel gets the coaching gig at all? Like, should he be considered?
No.
Not at all? Why is that? Because lack of experience?
Well, not only that, but it's not like the offense has worked wonders in his, you know, 7 or 8 games that he's coached so far.
Let me rephrase that. Had they done a proper coaching search, let him coach a couple games, get him in the running, could he have won the job?
No.
No, okay.
No. So, but I mean, on the flip side, too, I'm wondering, you know, are they going to be able to avoid big plays in the passing game? Because you know Air Force is going to run the ball, but, you know, Jalen Robinette, you know, very quietly, or maybe not very quietly, but he's having a very good year, and he's averaging 27 yards per catch.
Pretty good.
That's phenomenal. Let's be real. But yeah. I mean, this is a secondary that's been prone to breakdowns, you know, pretty much almost every week. And so I'm interested in seeing, you know, with a little more reshuffling of the deck, you know, obviously Mike Bell got his first start last week, in Logan against the Aggies. But I'm curious to see if they do decide to make more changes in the secondary, bring in more of the young guys to see what they have to offer. And if that's the case, you know, are they going to be able to contain Robinette? Because it's not like he's their one guy, but, you know, that's never stopped him from making big plays before.
Yeah, here's something that popped up now just about the secondary one more time. How I think this is, he's going off name recognition, because Stillhammer is now a Jim Thorpe Award semifinalist for the best defensive backs, one of 16. They're also quarterfinals for that Lott Impact Trophy Award. His play this year I don't think he deserves that. Do you?
I mean, he's had a couple of interceptions, if I'm not mistaken. He's been fine, I guess.
I would take Andrew Wingard over him in a second right now, the way he's playing.
Andrew Wingard is also a semifinalist.
I know.
On the year, has 2.5 tackles for loss, 1 sack, 2 interceptions, 3 pass breakups.
Eh.
So it's not bad, but maybe not what we've expected, you know, what we've seen of him in the last couple of years.
That's not one of the best 16 defensive back players in the country.
With those numbers. He also leads Air Force in tackles.
That's good and bad. I know he plays up a lot, so there's something to that where he's... Because Air Force really kind of runs like a 4-2-5 or 3-3-5 or something. He's technically a linebacker in some situations, but here's one thing why I know Eric Kiesel's probably not going to get a head coaching job during his press conference. Here's because they talked about him and Nick Saban, because he was with Alabama as an offensive consultant, where I don't know how much you learn from Saban when you're not in the coaching meetings, really. I know there's a lot, but not as much as you'd like, probably. But... Because so it wasn't position coach meetings, wasn't coordinator meetings for the most part, because of there's actual rules about that stuff. You could hire whoever you want. There's a reason Tedford's a consultant in Washington. Yeah. But he basically said here, quote, if you're head coach long term, you can install a long term plan. When it's short term, you have to pick and choose things to affect the team in a positive way. And so that it kind of says he's not going to get it. Not that we know we already know that's not the case, but. Would he, like, I know he wants to win. He wants to look good for either stay on staff or get another job. That's why I'm thinking, you mentioned maybe a QB change. I haven't heard anything of that. I don't think that's the case. But is he going to spice things up too much? Like, what would he do, like, to make changes? Or will he was already the OC, so we know what we're getting. Would he make any drastic changes? I don't know what changes he can make besides being not the smartest move and going to Zach Klein for some reason.
Well, honestly, if there was one change I'd hope he'd at least consider, it's reshuffling the offensive line, because it's just hasn't been working. And we saw it again last week in Utah State, where they just weren't able to run the ball. And I think that's more on the guys up front than it is on the guys in the backfield, like Dontell James and, you know, Trayvon Green, Justin Rice, those guys. You got to create running lanes, and they just haven't done it. And, you know, I think I may have mentioned this in a previous podcast, but they've already started to make some change. Like, they put Logan Hughes into the starting lineup at left guard, you know, but that's really the only change they've made at this point. And I'm wondering if they will make further changes if there are more struggles down the line.
Well, there's only a couple games left in the season, so a couple weeks. So what do you think? So is it, that's a big point spread, what, two touchdowns. Is Air Force going to end their losing streak and win this game?
Yeah, I think they will.
Do you think Fresno will show up? Like I said, it's either typically you either see teams roll over or they exceed for 1 week and just play out of their minds. Where do you kind of see that coming in for Fresno?
I think that they'll probably play inspired. I think, you know, I would expect to see maybe a couple of big plays. I'm hoping they can find them early rather than late and avoid the backdoor cover or something like that. because, you know, they still have talent at wide receiver. They still have talent in, you know, the backfield with running backs. It'll be interesting to see whether or not they can push back against this Air Force, you know, front seven, which has really, you know, maybe been exposed a little bit in conference play. So I think they'll be fine. I'm not expecting them to pull an upset or anything like that. I would probably take the points, but I would take Air Force to win.
Okay. I've looked around, but with all the coaching stuff, has there been any update on Aaron Peck returning?
I just looked at the depth chart, and they still have Delvon Hardaway listed as a starter, so okay. I probably wouldn't expect to see Peck this week.
Okay, that's an issue. I'm looking at the advanced stats on ESPN, or I guess they're not advanced stats, but simulations. Team ranking is probably in your corner, 33-20. Number fire, 44-20.
And Bill Connolly has it at 33-22, or 33-23, okay. Rather.
I'm kind of going in that range. I was going to go Air Force to a cover, but like, why do I can't trust Air Force either. They've been playing terrible football. They've been running the ball to, handing the ball off to multiple guys. Nobody's standing out, but I still think Air Force wins, but I think it'll be good for a good three quarters. And Air Force will probably get one of their patent, 15 play, 8 minute drives going 94 yards for a touchdown or something to win the game. So Falcons for the victory.
All right.
Game of the week on Saturday morning. Again, we're all in conference games, so we have five games this week. So, number 13, Boise State at Wyoming. Have you seen this line yet?
I have not.
Okay. Also, games are in the afternoon, so if you have stuff to do in the AM or want to watch other games, you have plenty of time. This is a 5 p.m. local Mountain Time, 4 p.m. Pacific. Take a gander. We know Boise's favored. How much are they favored by?
Is it something like 3 touchdowns?
Not 3 touchdowns.
Is it 4 touchdowns?
You're going the wrong way.
Okay, then tell me what it is.
13.5.
That's okay. Well, you know what? That is, I'll admit, and like Wyoming's having a very good year, but that is a little bit closer than I expected it to be.
Road game too. Even road game, you thought?
Yeah, even in a row. I mean, Boise's been playing pretty well, although they've been challenged in the last couple weeks, so maybe that has had an effect on the line.
Yeah, going -5 will do that for you.
Biggest biggest game at War Memorial Stadium since when?
Who?
A while, right?
I want to say, you may not remember this, but if people... Okay, I'm going back to the about a decade ago. University of Utah, 2004 at War Memorial Stadium. Utah trying to stand defeated. Game was to be on ABC. Mm-hmm. Known as in Utah, the Harry Potter game. You want to know why? Take a guess why it's the Harry Potter game?
Because it was preempted by Harry Potter and the Sorcerer's Stone.
One of the Harry Potter movies, because lo and behold, Laramie had a power outage that night.
Oh, bummer.
And so, I guess technical rules or whatever may be, I don't remember what Wyoming's record was. I just remember it was late in the year, and Utah was marching toward undefeated season. And I guess one of the rules is once you start, they went to, because I remember for a while, they showed the Sugar Bowl, I think, the year before. Like, mm-hmm. Okay, we'll just show this, but affiliates could choose, all right, keep showing this, or that's over, go to something else, because they were going to air the game no matter what. here in the Utah market, which is the dumbest thing ever, and out west, I believe, they decided to show that Harry Potter movie, and you can't stop it once it starts, I guess.
Oh, that's lame.
And so, yeah, that's... Yeah, it's probably the biggest game they've had. Yeah, maybe. Yeah, I don't think Utah went there in 08, but 04, that makes at least my memories. I'll say that. I could be wrong, but that was a pretty big game. But not necessarily because in this case it's a big game because Wyoming's 3-0 for the first time ever in conference play. One game from bowling. Yes, we can bring those back. Or we already are, but they may have to wait a week, I'm thinking, on that.
So it may seem obvious, but the one big thing that's going to have to happen if Wyoming wants to pull an upset, Brian Hill is going to have a big game. And, you know, I say that and it seems like, well, yeah, duh. But if you look back at the two games that he's had against Boise State in the past, they're among his worst performances, you know, since becoming the starter back in 2014. You know, in the penultimate game of that season, 2014, you know, he 21 carries, 65 yards, 2 touchdowns in a 63-14 loss. So,
I remember,
you know, that, a year later.
I'm like, come on, Brian Hill, give me something. Cause that's when he broke the record that year, 2 weeks before.
Yeah. And then 2015 was, you know, 23 carries, 76 yards. That's it. No scores, no nothing. No, they lost that game. So, you know, is he going to be able to push this Boise front seven in a way that he hasn't been able to in his two matchups in the past? I think, you know, that's kind of the one big question that hasn't been answered yet.
I think a little bit because, as we mentioned in the offseason or our preview show, their strength coach has bulked up their line. And So that's going to be positive, obviously. But in Boise State, really quick, they are fourth in the conference in yards per game and also fifth in yards allowed at 3.88. But six, the key thing, only 6 rushing touchdowns they've allowed. And so that's lead outside of San Diego State. That's the second best. And I think Wyoming could have more success than they have in the past. But what I really wanted to see, which would have been a good way to know what was going on, had Jamal Williams played against Boise State last week. Because, just to give us a better gauge. Because for Squally Canada did okay. I think he had, 4 yards of carry, 88 yards. Nothing amazing, but not terrible. And he's the backup, and he's okay. I would like to see an elite back against this defense. That would give me a better gauge, and they held him okay. BYU's line's okay, but to see that type of back, I know they're different, but it would just been nice to see what they could have done against a really, really good running back.
And I think one other thing that's going to key any kind of upset bid too is, you know, can they force Brett Rippon into turnovers the same way that BYU did last week? And the reason I say that is because, you know, obviously they're probably going to want to get Mick Nichols involved early. But if you look at the splits, they, you know, the Broncos haven't been that great of a running team early. You know, they've, you know, small sample size maybe. But, you know, 58 carries in the first quarters of games so far this year has netted only 203 yards, which is about 3.5 yards per carry. And, you know, conversely, that's kind of what Wyoming's been giving up all season long is 3.8 yards per carry. So if they can put the clamps on McNichols early and force Rippon to throw in third down situations, it'll be interesting to see whether Wyoming can create opportunities for themselves, because as we both know, they've been among the more proficient teams in the country in enforcing interceptions.
And defensive touchdowns.
Yeah, exactly. And so, I mean, and if you look at it, you know, they're right there with San Diego State with 11 interceptions in 7 games. So if they can create opportunities for themselves and force short fields, and if Brian Hill especially can take advantage of those short fields, you know, that's going to put Boise on the defensive. And if they're in a situation where Brett Rippon has to throw to catch up, is that the kind of situation that catches up with the Broncos? I mean, that would be something I would watch out for.
Yeah, nearly did last week. He still threw for 440 yards. There's five turnovers. Did he have three interceptions last week, or is it four?
I believe he had two and then a fumble, if I'm not mistaken.
Oh, and a fumble. Okay. One real quick. Let me back up really quick. You know, you mentioned first half or early rushing for Boise State. Oh, sorry. Am I still with you?
Yeah.
I'm keeping this in my headphones. Come out again, whatever. I don't care. that's why we do this way. That's why people listen, for me to screw up. That's the reason we're having so many more people listen, right? I screw up so much. But back to actual football. So I went to first half stats only.
Okay.
Boise State is last in the conference in yards at only 484 rushing yards in the first half.
Interesting.
They do average an okay 4 point, just over 4 yards per carry, but they have the fewest yards by Fresno State has 60 more than them. Excuse me, 40 more for them at 504. Boise State also is 11th in rushing attempts. So for me, that seems like, which we've seen a lot, or also for me, if you look at the Oregon State second half when they threw nearly every play, they want to throw early and throw often, even though they have one of the best running backs in the country. So it's interesting that it seems like their strategy, if you're just looking at the numbers, you would think they get up big by throwing, then they'll milk the clock and just run the clock out with McNichols in the second half. That's not what they're doing, but that's just interesting, just something to look out for. They're not running the ball very often in the first half.
Yeah, I guess that's also true. But conversely, if you're looking at the passing offense numbers by the first half,
yeah,
Boise is far and away the best team in the conference. You know, 14 touchdowns, 3 interceptions in the first half of games with a 182 quarterback rating. So it's kind of hard to argue with those results. If you can get ahead, and it's one of those things where, you know, the old axiom is, you know, you don't win when you run when you win.
Yeah.
And Boise State wins by throwing first, running later. But if they can force turnovers, especially on third and long situations, that's where I think it gets interesting.
Yeah, very true, and I just point that because that is just an odd difference in what they're doing. And also, Wyoming's rush defense isn't terrible. They're third in the conference in total yards and yards, maybe I mentioned this before, but yards allowed, fourth in yards allowed. So the rush defense is pretty good, but this is by far their best running back they played because Nebraska did okay on them. Here's the thing. They held Air Force. Here's the big stat that could be a key in the game. When they beat Air Force, they held them to just 3.8 yards per carry.
Mm-hmm.
That's huge versus the Falcons team. However, Eastern Michigan ran and ran and ran at over 5 yards per carry. And so I think you're right. Like, Wyoming, I don't think, if they go toe-to-toe, I don't think Wyoming can go toe-to-toe with Boise State. Maybe for a little bit.
I mean, I think the linebackers are probably going to have the game of their life is trying to contain McNichols because... Yeah. You know, obviously he's a receiving threat as well as a running threat.
Logan Wilson, be ready.
Yeah, Logan Wilson, you know, not only him, you know, Lucas Waka, DJ May, all of whom are having, you know, very good years as a unit. But, you know, they're going to need to play kind of they're going to need to be at their best to really pull an upset.
Yeah, and also one thing to look out for as well, if you look at Josh Allen playing at Nebraska, if he forces stuff and gets flustered or they need to come back, he did not perform well in that Nebraska game. And Boise State's defense is probably, and their difference isn't too much between those two teams defensively, or even overall, really. And so they played close versus Nebraska, which is very good on their part. But if there's third and long, second and long, a lot of passing down situations, hope maybe he's gotten better from that, but maybe he can't find Tanner Gentry. He forces stuff. He likes to move run around and move his feet, move the pocket. He may force stuff. And so that's where I'm thinking that's how the game will come out. I think Wyoming will hang around. Brian Hill will play well, but if it comes down to Josh Allen passing more than he probably should and needing to make plays on his own, he needs to prove to me he's not going to mess up or have a quarter, that fourth quarter like he did versus Nebraska. And I think that's how the game's going to turn out. It's going to be close, but then he'll kind of just screw up or make an error, poor decision, or not, to be more on the positive side, do too much on his own to make a play happen. Like if you look at the Eastern Michigan run where he hurtled over a guy, the overtime victory versus NIU scrambling it to get the game winner touchdown, or the draw play versus CSU for a TD to seal the game, he may want to try to do too much. And that might be his downfall in this game. But one last thing, special teams as well. Boise's kind of fumbled. That's the other turnover we're missing. Three picks, a fumble, and then the muff punt against BYU. If they can cause some special teams turnovers, get a 10-yard field, punch it in with Brian Hill, maybe. I just don't think – I think Boise's going to win and cover, but it's going to be an interesting game for probably 85% of it.
I will take the points, but I'll take Boise to win.
Same.
If you're looking at the last
– negative.
If you're looking at the last month especially, the only game that they've really won comfortably is that game against New Mexico. You know, they only beat Utah State by 11. They only beat Colorado State by 5. They only beat BYU by 1. And it wasn't as though they didn't play, you know, good complete games, but they weren't blowing opponents away.
Sure.
And I think Wyoming is good enough, and I think this is probably the time where Brian Hill finally, you know, puts up a big game against the Broncos, and it's probably going to go down to the wire. But I would think that, you know, I'll take Boise by about a field goal, but I'll take Wyoming in the points against the spread.
I like the 13.5, so I'm going 14-point Boise win.
All right.
All right, then. UNLV at San Jose State, 8:30 p.m. Mountain Time, 7:30 p.m. Pacific. Rebels are a slim 2.5-point favorite over the Spartans there on the road. I think this is the game we want to see. Who is it? Charles Williams and Lexington Thomas actually run the ball well rebound.
A little uneven lately, I think. But if you're ever going to get back on track, you know, doing it against this defense is probably the way to do it, because they're, you know, on average they're giving up 5.5 yards per carry on the year. The Spartans are on defense.
22 touchdowns.
Yeah, and I mean, it's been even worse in conference play too. You know, that number had gone up to about 5.8 in conference with 12 touchdowns in 4 games. And I think that being able to reestablish the running game like that is going to take a lot of pressure off of Dalton Snead, who, you know, rebounded a little bit last week, but, you know, wasn't quite all the way back to where he was in other games against like Fresno State and stuff like that.
Yeah, I'm checking the depth chart really quick for both teams. I know there's injury concerns of, well, Kenny Potter, just let's take him out of the game for what happened last week. But looking really quick, because nobody covers the team out there in San Jose. No, Potter's still considered the starter, so that's good to know. And as for the Rebels really quick, because I know Johnny Stanton reappeared on the depth chart again. It looks like it's Dalton Snead the rest of the way, because it goes Snead, Palandek, and Stanton. And I'm fine with that. That's not an issue. But I think if the Rebels are going to win, like I said, run the ball well and keep running. And I don't know. I think Kenny Potter will probably have a pretty good game, because this UNLV secondary, it could be had against. It's nothing special. And so look for him to have a big game. But I think Rebels will make too many plays offensively and can get to win that way.
I mean, I think the other thing that could possibly decide this game too is, you know, which team wins the turnover battle. And I'm not really expecting either of these quarterbacks to be pressured too much by the pass rush on either side. But, you know, these are still both really good secondaries, I think. Like, you know, UNLV, we haven't really talked much about their secondary, but, you know, they've got guys back there who, if they aren't making interceptions all that much, they have a lot of pass breakups. Like Torrey McTyre and Darius Mouton both have 9 apiece already this year. You know, Troy Hawthorne's having a pretty good year. He has a few pass breakups, a few forced fumbles even. So if they can turn some of those pass defenses into an interception or two, you know, that could make a big difference. And, you know, conversely, San Jose State, you know, maybe they didn't get very many chances last week against, you know, San Diego State, because they don't really throw the ball. The Aztecs don't. But, you know, they...
Let me ask you this. What's the difference between pass breakup and pass defended? Do you know?
I don't think there's actually any difference. I think I'm just kind of using them both synonymously.
Well, I'm looking at CFB stats, and they have 10 for both of these guys you mentioned, Mountain and McTyre, 10 pass defended, 9 pass breakups.
I have no idea.
I'm just wondering. I don't remember. I thought they were the same thing. Like a pass breakup or a defending means you knock a pass down.
But I mean, you know, The Spartans, on the other hand, they still have Andre Chachere, who can pick off an errant pass if you're not careful. They have, you know, Jermaine Kelly, who's quietly having a pretty decent season at corner. They still have Maurice McKnight, who's having a very good year. So if either of these quarterbacks are careless, that could make a big difference down the line. Because if one of these teams can get a lead off of a short field, I think that especially favors UNLV because, you know, surprisingly, they've been one of the better teams in the country at finishing drives.
I also know what will happen this game. Look for a clean uniform, possibly from Snead and Stanton, because like you mentioned before, neither team can sack the other team.
Yeah. So, I mean, I think they'll...
And that'll be nice to see. Kenny Potter will be like, I don't have a headache after this game. I don't have a arm bruise or too many injuries. It's like a practice almost. I only get hit a little bit. But it'll be nice to see. That's where I'm thinking that how good these secondaries are. I think this could be the biggest game of the year for Kenny Potter.
It could be, yeah.
But will it be enough? I don't know.
So what do you think? Who do you got in this game?
This is the most conflicting game in a while because, well, San Jose State's only 2-6, and UNLV is 3-5, but playing pretty well at 3-5. I got to lean Rebels because running game is much better compared or the, excuse me, the, let me sound more intelligent. Rushing attack, I think, is going to perform better. And San Jose State, if they, here's the thing, if Potter goes off well, that will definitely help this running attack, but their running attack has been so inconsistent. I think they can move the ball well, but I think Dalton can make more plays. We've seen him run the ball well. He can throw okay. He'll move the pocket. He'll add to that rushing attack. But I think, believe it or not, the Rebels are more consistent, I want to say, in both the pass and run, kind of. I know. Hey, you can yell at me. Snead went 2-15 versus San Diego State. I'm sorry for saying that, but I just think if San Jose State's going to win, it's because Potter goes off for a huge game. Rebels can run and pass, I think, enough and still win this game. That's where I'm kind of leaning. I think Snead may not throw a ton, but he'll be, I don't know, maybe I'm convincing myself not to pick this game, but the right way. I just think that UNLV's offense, let me put it this way, has more options to move the ball, I think. Maybe. Neither team's very good, so I'm struggling here to find something to say about that.
Would this count as a stupid upset pick if I took San Jose State?
No. Sorry.
That's fair. I do like the Spartans in this game, though.
I was debating on Saints. No. Nope, I can't do it. UNLV. Oh, sorry.
That's fair.
Next game, which nobody can see. Thank you, VPN users. And, yeah. New Mexico at Hawaii. Not even going to be shown locally because whatever money Time Warner Oceanic wanted was too rich for Lobos to air locally. So radio it is, or if you're in Hawaii, turn into Robert Kekalula and pay the $45 for pay-per-view. This needs to change. With this team being better, there has to be a way to get this game in on the mainland, right? There has to be.
We just need to get more games on ESPN.
That, yeah, that's true. But this game against, this is probably, there's some other good games. It's not a bad game, clearly, because New Mexico's 4-3, Hawaii's 4-4, 3 points away from being undefeated in league play. Going to the island, this is one of the games we mentioned that if Hawaii's going to go bowling, they have to win this game. Because three of the games they have left on schedule are winnable, others are not. And this is one of the games where, if you include this game, the Fresno game, and UMass game, they have to win this if they're going to a bowl game.
Yeah, and I mean, what it's going to come down to, which is pretty much what every New Mexico game comes down to, is are the Warriors going to be able to put up a fight against this running game? Because, you know, the Lobos haven't let up, regardless of whoever they're playing on, you know, on the ground. You know, they're averaging 6.8 yards per carry.
Jeez, on the season. It's ridiculous.
And in conference play, that number's only gone down a little bit. Like, in three games, it's like 6.7, basically. And, you know, conversely, Hawaii's run defense has gotten a little bit better. And I think, you know, they're middle of the pack, which is good, but not great. And I'm wondering, is that going to be enough to really stem the tide in this game?
I don't know. One thing is also interesting. There's no line on this game at all.
Really?
Yeah, I was looking around. Went to Vegas Insider. Went to the ESPN page here. They do not have a line in this game. I don't know if Hawaii's defense can hold up to New Mexico. It looks like it's TeamRankings.com has a line on here. They put Hawaii by 3.5 and predict a 33-30 victory for the Warriors. Mm-hmm. Can Hawaii score 33 points?
Against this defense? Absolutely.
Okay, it's making sure.
And I mean, if you, they've been one of the better passing offenses in conference. Like, I think we have enough to say that they've been pretty good overall. Like, you know, Drew Brown has, I think, the third best passing percentage behind, you know, San Diego State and Boise State, which are the two teams we might have expected to be that efficient. You know, he's got 9 touchdowns against just 2 interceptions, so he's playing really well. It's not as though they've been playing a lot of scrubs, you know what I mean?
And they're second in yards per game overall, Brown and including Ike Kawuzele, so.
Yeah, and I mean, conversely.
8 yards an attempt is pretty good, too, so.
And conversely, I think if there's one weakness in this New Mexico defense, it's that secondary, because by quarterback rating, it's, you know, next to last on the season. And if you just narrow that down to conference games, they're far and away the worst in the conference. Like, they're giving up, you wouldn't believe some of these numbers I'm looking at right now. Like, they're giving up almost 12 yards an attempt.
Oh.
10 passing touchdowns against 1 interception. Yeesh. And that's
again, so is this going to be the Marcus Kemp show then tomorrow or on Saturday?
And that's against the 5th fewest pass attempts.
Oh man,
they're like the average quarterback rating in 4 conference games so far is 193.
Jeez,
which is so basically everybody's been looking like, you know, Jake Browning this year against against New Mexico. So is Drew Brown going to be able to take advantage of that? I mean, at home. Probably. I mean, if you're asking me to take a stand on it, yeah.
I think it's possible, but how good is this Hawaii rushing defense? Because that's going to be the reason they win, if that they can limit those huge plays that McCorrells has, Taron Gibson, Owens, Lamar Jordan. That's going to be my key if Hawaii's going to win, just stopping those running yards. They'll get their yards, but the big plays is just how New Mexico makes a living. It just crushes everybody by going for a 40-yard, 50-yard, 60-yard rushing play.
Yeah, and that's why I really wish I could watch this game, because it's really kind of strength against question mark on both sides of the ball.
Because here's how it is really quick. Overall, Hawaii's giving up over 5 yards an attempt on the ground, which is near the bottom of the conference. Yards allowed near the bottom of the conference. 19 touchdowns, second most in the conference, tied for second most. I don't know, because playing at Hawaii is tough. And here's one positive I can say: when they played Air Force last week, they only held them to 4.5 yards per attempt, which is for them, that's good. The 3 touchdowns hurt, but there wasn't one guy that beat them. But also, if you run nearly 90 times, you're going to have yards gone against you.
Yeah.
But here's reason for positive for this rush defense. 2 of their games, non-conference games, were over 7 yards per carry at Michigan, at Arizona. And so those are obviously better teams, better talent, bigger guys. Rushing attack itself, I would put New Mexico's rushing attack against anybody in the country. I don't care. But I don't know if New Mexico's going to average 7 yards a carry against this Hawaii defense. Because they've improved throughout the year. But again, the benchmark would be the Air Force game after that, where they, which was actually their, outside of San Jose State, was their best rushing game for yards per play allowed since the Arizona loss at 7 yards per carry. They've been right around 4 yards per carry in conference play. Mm-hmm. And so the number's a bit deceiving to say they're over 5.5 almost, 5.3 actually. But they've been hovering for about 4.5 yards. That's still not great, but that's a vast improvement. And Nevada has a pretty good running game, James Butler. UNLV has a decent running game. Actually, UNLV actually ran the most when you look at yards per play and touchdowns, tied with Air Force for 3 scores allowed each. Mm-hmm.
So what do you
think? Who do you got? What are you taking? Who are you taking?
Honestly, I see this as kind of a first to 40 kind of game.
Ooh. Like the Cotton Bowl game a couple weeks ago?
More or less, yeah. I think that it won't be nearly as run heavy, because I think that Hawaii will be able to, you know, take advantage of the New Mexico secondary with big plays. But I'm taking the Lobos.
You're going against Nick Rolovich?
I am going 8. Sorry, Nick.
You sure you want to do that?
I do want to.
Your favorite Twitter handle?
Does that count as coaching? Does that count as a stupid upset pick?
No, because Hawaii hasn't been good in a while. I can't. Here's the, if you want a stupid upset pick, you got to take Wyoming or your Fresno State Bulldogs.
Okay, well then we'll have to wait on that because.
Another week.
I do like New Mexico. I mean, I think obviously there'll probably be a lot of big plays on both sides of the ball, but I like New Mexico to kind of limit possessions with their running attack, and I like them to be able to, you know, come up with big plays on the ground against this Hawaii defense, and I think that'll make the difference.
If there is an over-under, I would take the over by a mile in this game.
Oh, yeah.
Too bad there's not. I got to go with Hawaii at home playing well. I think Hawaii's going to win outright. Well, there's no line, but they're going to win. But it'll be, like you said, 40-34, something like that. And I think the difference will be because Hawaii can actually run and pass, whereas Mexico hasn't shown the pass very well for the past couple of games. But I'm going Hawaii to win in a close one to be one step closer to heading to a bowl game.
I think this will probably be the most fun game of the weekend if you like offense.
Yeah, but can somebody Periscope the game for us? Facebook Live? Somebody?
Anybody?
that's what I would like to prefer. Hey, good thing is we're gonna give away tickets to a Hawaii Boise State game soon. So if you're there, maybe you'll do us a favor in Periscope. Well, that game's on CBS, so it doesn't matter, but. Periscope the game for us, fans. That's what we'd like. Because, yeah. All right, so that's our long show. We are not as long as I thought. Only 75 minutes at this point.
Not bad.
For spending 25 minutes on freaking Jeff Tedford and Fresno State.
Yeah.
All right, we're done. Let's wrap the show up here. Thank you for listening. If you made it this far, say I listened to the whole thing. We appreciate that. We liked it. And tell a friend and have your friend tell a friend because something's working to get more listeners. So we appreciate that. Give us a review on iTunes, preferably 4 to 5 star. I was going to say 3, but no. Let's shoot high. 4 to 5 star review on either platform. But we appreciate everybody listening to the show. Check out our website. We'll have plenty of Tim Drutter news up. I have something up with not Tim Drutter news, excuse me, Fresno news, not Drutter news. That sounds weird, but whatever. We're done here. I'm tired. It's late. Wrap up the show. MWCconnection.com is our little website that apparently people like to watch and listen to us chat about this. All right, that's our show. And again, we're always biased against your team. So later, guys.